to another episode of Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. I am your host, Josh Gillespie. This week's show is going to be a fun one, guys. We're going to have on Christy Kelly as part of the regular crew. You can find her on Hoosier Access and ChristyKelly.com. We're going to be talking with Christy about education. This is one of her passionate areas. She's very intensely concerned about education and education reform. We're going to be talking about what's going on here in Indiana and how it can even apply nationally. We're going to talk about teachers, frankly. We're going to have a good conversation with Christy. And then we're going to have an interesting conversation with Mark Warner, everyone, another part of the Gillespie crew, who can also be found on HoosierAccess.com. Mark, as you may recall, took a very hard-line stance against the TSA in last week's show. I think he softened people. In the week since our conversation, if you've checked out his Twitter feed, Mark has gone soft on the TSA. He could basically pass as a TSA employee himself. I don't know, people. He's giving in. Anyway, we'll be having a fun conversation with Mark about TSA. And then we're going to take it even a step further and have even more fun. If you're on Twitter and you follow some of the politicos around the country on Twitter and some of their interactions with a lefty by the name of Real Brother, a.k.a. Theron Cal. That's always a fun one. But anyway, on this week's show, I'm going to ask the audience, I'm going to ask you guys, to indulge me for a bit and allow me to do something that I haven't done on this show before. I'm going to revisit last week's monologue topic because I think it's such a critical topic that we need to ensure that we give it the attention it requires. The reason I find the subject of the GM bailout to be so critical is due to the potential trend that this action sets. The very idea that government should be in the business of picking both winners and losers, as well as taking over failing ventures, is a concept that shakes the very foundation that this country is built upon. It was the free market which enabled the English colonies in America to go from abysmal failures, under a socialistic model, mind you, to incomparable success stories. It was the free market which helped a nation of farmers become the most powerful nation this planet has ever seen in the span of around 200 years. The free market helped defeat Germany and Japan in World War II. That and a bunch of military might. And there is no question that the communist Soviet Union was destroyed by the power of free market capitalism. The free market is mankind's most powerful solution to ending poverty and disease, especially when joined with a system of property rights added to a healthy dose of freedom. But nothing more closely resembles rats fleeing the proverbial sinking ship than politicians facing an economic crisis during an election year. It's as if the prospect of not being reelected makes politicians forget that Adam Smith ever lived. For proof of this, look no further than 2008, when two liberals faced off in that year's presidential contest. Neither one had any experience in economic affairs. In fact, neither candidate had much of a record in the private sector, John McCain's military service aside. One candidate ran as an outspoken critic of capitalism, while the other wanted you to vote for him purely because of his wartime service. Given the lack of any actual private sector experience, it's not surprising that the eventual solution to the housing market collapse was yet another dose of heavy government intervention, and in the case of this monologue, including a complete takeover of Detroit's most venerable car company. Before we get to some more facts of this deal, there's one thing I really want to point out. Most politicians are afraid of the free market, and not just Democrats either. The problem for elected officials is that the invisible hand described by Adam Smith is beyond their control, and there's nothing more that politicians hate than something that they can't control. Let's face it, voters want to see action. They want to see their elected representatives roll up their sleeves and get to work to fix the problems we all face. In contrast, free market capitalism works best when mostly left alone. When producers and consumers are given the freedom to choose the relationships that suit them best, then we all benefit. But that isn't something that's easily put down onto paper, and most voters don't like to be told that most economic problems are solved when the people they've elected to take care of things step aside and get out of the way. Politicians who want a long career succeed best when they can demonstrate direct action, not when they tell voters that the market will correct itself if left alone. Now we come to the GM bailout, a perfect example of politicians getting involved in a situation purely to demonstrate that their constituents, that they will take care of things. Back in 2008, remember the election year, a number of large companies went to D.C. with hat in hand in order to drink from the tap of free cash flowing from the Capitol Hill. And after all the too-big-to-fail Wall Street financial concerns drank their fill, the union-controlled automakers were next. Fortunately for them, they just finished electing perhaps the most pro-union president since FDR. And in fact, it could be argued that no group was more instrumental to electing Barack Obama than the unions. In fact, it could be argued that the Democratic Party has few friends more important than the United Auto Workers, which gave nearly $24 million to Democrats, including $4 million in 2008. In return, the UAW received 55% of Chrysler and 17.5% of GM, along with about $9.9 billion in cash, with the GM stake worth somewhere around $8 billion alone at current prices. That's a return that would make even Karl Marx blush. Compare that astronomical return to what GM's bondholders received, essentially a 10% stake in the company worth roughly $5 billion, in exchange for the $27 billion in bonds they once held. And who are these bondholders, you may be asking? Well, they're mostly GM retirees and other pension funds. So just to clarify, the Obama administration rewarded its very generous allies, the United Auto Workers, with a lush bailout that would make Gordon Gekko blush, while shafting GM retirees, state employee pension funds, and 401k account holders. I guess that's a new definition of yes, we can. Well, stick around, folks. We have a great show coming up. Again, like I mentioned, we're going to be talking with Christy Kelly next. We're going to be talking about education. And then we're going to talk to Mark Warner. Figure out what his whole flip-flop on TSA is about. He's gone soft on government bureaucrats, I'm telling you. He's just a softy. Softy for a government worker. Anyway, stay tuned. We'll be right back after these messages. You're listening to Gillespie on FTR Radio, FTRradio.com. Stick around.
Hey Gillespie fans, this is Fingers Tiberius Molloy. Listen to The Snark Factor with Fingers Molloy every Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time only on FTR Radio. And check out my website, fingersmolloy.com.
Welcome back to Gillespie. Like I said before in the monologue, we got Christy Kelly here, ChristyKelly.com and HoosierAccess.com. We're going to be talking about education. Now, this is a topic that is in Christy's wheelhouse, isn't it, Christy?
Yes, it is definitely a passion of mine.
And one of the things that one of the people that Indiana elected in 2008, in a wave year for Democrats, you know, Barack Obama wins Indiana. But our statewide candidate included a Dr. Tony Bennett. No, not the singer, who I don't believe is a doctor, but, you know, a gentleman by the name of Tony Bennett, who has also been very passionate about education. And he and the House Republicans, prior to the November midterms, introduced a Strengthening Indiana plan, which one of the pillars was a pillar on education. And there was an article yesterday in the Indianapolis Star written by one of the columnists, Matt Tully, who is a big education advocate. And he was talking about how teachers, you know, even though he's a big education advocate and, you know, the system needs to be reformed and how the unions have basically just told everybody what to do, the teachers are the ones basically feeling left out of the debate, especially the good ones. I mean, Christy, you've been around, you know, you homeschool your kids, but I mean, education is your passion. And I mean, what was your take on his view on, you know, seemingly that this whole debate is making education to be the teachers to be the bad guy?
Well, I think it muddies the waters. I don't think the teachers being the bad guys is the issue. I can look at the teachers a little bit separately from the teachers union. The teachers union will reject any reform that will diminish their power. Now, as far as good teachers, bad teachers, I think teachers are simply a victim of the system itself. And we need to reform the system, and it goes beyond just rewarding good teachers or, you know, a witch hunt for bad teachers, because there's a lot more that goes into finding out how a teacher's performance by just simply test scores. I do think it is all about the system that we have, which is failing, and it's not our teachers necessarily. And so I do think they get a bad rap. My personal opinion is that the system has handicapped our teachers. It has tied their hands behind their backs and in the way the system is set up. So I give that a failing grade, and not necessarily the teachers. As in any go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, no, I was going to say, well, what would be the Christy Kelly approach to changing that? I mean, clearly there are bad teachers in the system, and, I mean, there are more good teachers.
There's a very natural way to root out bad teachers, and I kind of subscribe to Milton Friedman's free market view on this, and I think the solution to that would be the natural evolution of things that would be the survival of the fittest, as far as the fittest teachers, would be universal school vouchers. And when I say universal school vouchers, I mean vouchers for everyone regardless of income. And I don't think we should discriminate from those who have money and those who don't have money. It's certainly the discriminatory system the way it is set up right now, with lower income children trapped in failing schools. But busing is not a solution, and we've already seen how that fails. The universal school vouchers would create a free market in such a way that we would essentially take our failing public schools and turn them into private schools, but it is still funded by taxpayers, but at the same time, it would cost us so much less to educate our students.
Now, explain that to me, because now you just threw me for a loop there. Because, I mean, I'm following along with, you know, universal vouchers. I would assume that would apply to even virtual charter schools, which, believe it or not, apparently there are 90 virtual charter schools in the state of Indiana with over 2,000 students enrolled. And, you know, having a virtual charter school, that could be a benefit to those stuck in a poor school system, because they could still get out and get involved in a charter school. But how do you make a public school a private school yet still fund it with tax dollars?
Well, it would be the universal vouchers. And of course, you know, as the competition, you know, as time marches on and the competition is on, they will become as in any time that you have a free market, there will be more innovation. And simply the competition itself will drive that. And as we see in any typical free market. And if you do, many, many studies have been done, as well as whether it's just our NAT here in the U.S. and studies internationally on education. And the privately educated students outscore publicly educated students by pretty large margins, and as well as the cost to educate these students. Privately educated students are educated at a fraction of the cost of publicly educated students, so we've got a really big problem. And I would see universal school vouchers as solving that. Yes, it essentially would take the schools. We have the buildings. The buildings are there. The teachers are there. But if you then give it the school vouchers, then we will see these individual schools competing to keep their students.
Yeah. Well, here's my question for you. A while back, I had written on the Strengthening Indiana Plan on HoosierAccess.com for those interested. Like I said last week in our interview with Dave Frizzell, the Strengthening Indiana Plan is a plan that can basically be applied in any state. This isn't just an Indiana kind of plan. But what did you think about the education pillar per se?
Well,
I mean, I know that
there
are
a step in the right direction.
Okay.
I see things, you know, like protecting and expanding existing school choice options in public schools. Yeah, that is good. And providing, you know, these students in failing schools grants to attend schools of choice. But at the same time, it's going to be kind of lopsided, you know. I mean, if we have universal school vouchers, it will eventually, the market will balance itself out. You know, I would see, of course, at the initial, because it is such dramatic, it is very dramatic. It is radical reform that I'm proposing here, but it's not a new idea. You know, Milton Friedman wrote on this, and it's just, the light bulbs went off for me anyway. It's like, this is such the answer for the problems we've had. And he wrote about this quite some time ago, and I'm surprised. Well, I guess I shouldn't be surprised, because the power of the unions have really kept this down and from happening. And so we've had school choice kind of trickle here and there, and it's coming in, it's becoming more popular and more accepted, but at a very slow rate. And there's not enough choice for everyone, and that's why we are not seeing the improvements that need to happen.
Now, tell me this. Now, I'm going to put you on the spot here, and you didn't know I was going to ask this question, but I'm going to put you on the spot anyway. Now that we have, in the Indiana House, you know, we have 60 Republicans. I mean, we have a majority that no party has ever seen in the Indiana House, and we have a supermajority in the Indiana Senate. The Democrats don't even have to show up for business to get done. I mean, how cool is that? And do you have hope? Now, again, I mean, I know that you don't have your kids in the Indiana education system, which,
but
although,
I do have my kids that live in a society and are going to be working with these students are the leaders of tomorrow. Our education, about it. Our education system governs the direction of our country.
No, exactly. So, What do you think the chances are of some of these reforms actually passing, and even to go further in years ahead? I mean, if you had to ballpark it, and granted, I know I put you on the spot because, you know, you're still learning about Indiana politics. You got
right.
A huge grasp on national stuff, and especially education reforms, healthcare. I mean, we talked to you last week. We got you going on healthcare, and they couldn't stop you. You know, how do you see something like this being able to advance? I mean, is there a possibility we could actually see further advancement of and Indiana, shockingly, being a leader in education reform?
Wow, that would be fantastic. I think the best thing that happened to Indiana was Indiana's failure in the bid for Race to the Top, because it really was a race to the takeover by the national government. The more centralized our education system is, the worse we are. And now Republicans tend to have a less government attitude, and I think if we need to decentralize our education system as much as possible. And, you know, of course, with universal school vouchers, we'll be taking it all the way down to the schools themselves. But it needs to be less controlled even by state. Because it hasn't always been that way. And the more centralized education has become, the worse off we have seen the test scores go down. The more control the government has, the worse it becomes. So, you know, us dodging that bullet of the national government giving us the seductive monies for education, because, you know, as you can see in the comparison between privately schooled and publicly schooled students, money's not the answer, because these privately schooled students pay a lot less, even though mom and dad's forking it out of their own pocket, and it seems like they're getting a really high pricey education. They're not, compared to our public school students, who in studies across the nation on average pay $5,000 more per student for education than a private school student. It's crazy. It's just shocking. And So I think with conservatives typically want, you know, to save the taxpayers more money, and if they were to consider these kinds of radical reforms, and they'd have to be quite brave to march forward, you know,
yeah,
with such dramatic changes, and they would be taking on the teachers' unions.
Mm-hmm.
But like in Matthew Tully's article, the teacher, a member of the teachers' union, said, well, we are all concerned. We want to put the students first. If they really want to put the students first, this is why they would embrace these ideas.
You know, Christy, I tell you, time with you flies by. And I mean, especially when we get you going on the topic. I love it. Unfortunately, our time has come to an end. But you know, I love that we have Christy back on the show.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be back.
And fortunately, you know, our schedules, we're able to be a little bit more flexible and have everyone on the show, even if it is in their own segment. But I want everyone to stick around. We're going to be talking with Mark Warner next. We're going to be talking about TSA. Has he turned leaf? Is he now a bureaucrat TSA-loving crazy guy? Well, we'll see. You'll have to tune in next to listen to Mark Warner rant in favor. Really? Maybe not.
Really?
Of the TSA. We'll see. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after these messages.
Stories. We all love them, and we all have them. Whether you're a candidate, public office, or a small business, you have a story which is incredibly unique to you. The problem isn't having a story, the problem is how to tell your story. And that's where my friend Jacob Barry comes in. Jacob is a gifted storyteller who has the added bonus of being an experienced campaign professional, marketer, sales professional, and small business owner. Not only can he put the right words together, he knows exactly what needs to be said and how to say it. So the next time you need a speech, sales letter, article, or marketing piece, trust the professional I go to. Trust Jacob Perry. You can reach him on the web at www.jacobperry.us. Give him a call at 772-678-0820. That is 772-678-0820. Or drop him a line at jacob@jacobperry.us. FTRradio.com. With me this segment is Mark Warner, and we're going to kind of have a rehash of our conversation last week, our point counterpoint on TSA. This is a story that just will not die. And if you will recall, Mark and I sort of took opposite sides, obviously, because it was a point counterpoint segment. But basically, what we're going to be doing here is, based on a couple of tweets that I saw from Mark over the Thanksgiving weekend, he apparently has changed his tune. The TSA is a bunch of good people who are doing the right job, who believe that they're out to serve and protect our country. Is that right, Mark?
That, Josh, see, now you're putting words in my mouth.
I don't know. I thought that was a pretty accurate statement, you know.
No, it wasn't. What I was saying was, if you would not... You're a typical bureaucrat. Putting words in my mouth. Look, that's
actually,
not what I was...
wouldn't I be the media if I'm putting words in your mouth? Misrepresenting a couple tweets?
True. Yeah, you're misrepresenting. What I was basically saying was one of our friends was flying over the weekend.
Yes.
Flew over Thanksgiving weekend.
In from Baltimore.
Yeah, flew into Baltimore. Flew out of India to Baltimore and back, you know, from Baltimore. And only had to go through the metal detector. Didn't have to go through the regular scanner or the pat downs. And
that sounds like my trip out to Washington.
Right. And so I think that's happening to a lot of people. But as far as the TSA goes, I think they need to tone it down a little bit.
Seriously, don't you think that the media is just overplaying this? In fact, I believe that's kind of what you said with the tweets.
The media is totally overplaying it. And I agree with that assessment, but at the same time, going back to last weekend's chat with you was, one guy makes a videotape and the whole thing blows over. Blows apart and, everybody's getting patted down. Everybody's getting, scanned naked and everybody. No, not everybody. And I don't think if they're going to do, and I don't think it's fair that they do one person and then let the other three go by. I mean, if you're going to do it to everybody.
You know, I got to be honest. When I flew out of Indianapolis that one morning into D.C., the scanners weren't even being used, from what I recall. A lot of people were just going through the normal padnometers, metal detectors, and everything seemed to be fine, There was no crazy scanning. Granted, it was about 5:15 in the morning, so.
Right. The last time I flew out of Indianapolis, D.C., which I was flying into BWI, but the scanners were being used, and I only saw out of, like, I think there was like 50 or 60 people in line, I only saw two people go through that.
Uh-huh.
And at the time, I didn't really think about it too much because I'm like, But then a couple months later, everybody's like, oh, my God, they're seeing me naked.
Yeah.
And I'm going, wait a minute. Those were being used 2 months ago, and I didn't have to go through it. And out of the 60 people, I only saw two people go through it.
Yeah.
And so as far as I'm concerned, I think if they're going to do it for everybody. If they're not, then don't do it at all. That's my argument now.
So you think that anybody who flies, everyone has to go through either a pat down or a scan?
Well, if they're gonna, because what they're doing now is they're just pulling random people.
Well,
they're doing it with random people, just random people. Oh, you go through the scanner. Oh, you go through the metal detector.
Well, I think more to your point, shortly after we had our conversation last week, and this was kind of all the hubbub the past week, was of the little boy who was actually strip-searched by TSA.
That's alone.
Although the father took off the shirt. The father was there the whole time.
Doesn't matter. Five-year-old boy, really?
And yesterday, Dr. Melissa Clothier of Melissa Tweets, who also here has a program here on FTR Radio, she posted a video to her website at libertypundits.net. It was a link over from The Atlantic of a woman, a mother, who asked that her breast milk not be scanned by the radiator. And she's taken off to the side. She's put into the screening area, and her stuff goes through the scanner. Well, she gets out of the screening area, and then she starts going over to her stuff to see if it was scanned and pull out the rules, because beforehand she had pulled out the rules, TSA rules, saying what can and can't be scanned, and I guess breast milk is one of the things or something like that. I don't know. In all honesty, I'm kind of summarizing 2 minutes of an 11-minute video. But in the brief time that I saw, she gets out of the scanning area, which actually looks more like a holding chamber, in all honesty. She comes over to her stuff to check to see if, to find the rules and to see if her milk has been scanned, because she'd be a little upset because she asked that it not be. And the TSA agents say, you can't touch your stuff. They get a little indignant with her based on what I was able to see. And then they put her back in the screening area. Now, granted, I have it paused at minute 218 right now out of 11:45, but just in that little bit of time, I mean, you're already seeing some kind of, like, what the heck is going on here? Now, as with every story, there are two sides, and we're only seeing one side of the story here. But still, it does seem like in certain areas, like you say, TSA is getting a little out of hand. But, again, for the most part, aside from what seem to be isolated incidences, which I guess, if you see more of them, they're not necessarily so isolated. But, we can only point to three things right now on video of a guy saying, don't touch my junk, a kid getting strip searched, which really you got to question TSA's thinking behind that, and then a mother getting her being detained twice because she wants to make sure that her breast milk wasn't basically x-rayed because, she wants to give that to her kid. But. Well, and apparently there is all I heard over the weekend, maybe it was on Drudge, of a kid who had leg braces, who was asked to take them off. before going through a scanner. Now, granted, those are metal. You know? Going through a metal detector, I'm just saying, you know. But
here's my thing, is there was a story online from... Oh, man, I don't... Hold on, let me try to find it. Because this was a story about some soldiers coming home. Hold on, let me find it. Because I'll read it. And this is the kind of stuff that I was talking about last week. Was just really just stupid and ridiculous on so many different levels that... Hold on.
I'm sorry I put you on the spot here. That's what I did.
Yeah.
Now, see, what I want to know, while you're looking that up, what I want to know is why we're concerned about all these people getting onto our planes and, you know, terrorizing passengers for their breast milk and being little kids, where you get Marines stabbed at Best Buy on Black Friday. What's more dangerous, going to Best Buy on Black Friday or flying a plane? I mean,
right.
These shoppers, I tell you, Black Friday makes people just nuts. But anyway, that's neither here nor there, I guess. You know, shopper arrested after cutting in line and raging. Mall food court placed on lockdown after fight. Reports of gunshots. Maybe they need to be putting these TSA scanners over in malls.
Yeah, these people on Black Friday are crazy. I mean,
shopper arrested after packing gun and belt, knives, and pepper grenade. Seriously?
Yeah. I know.
Okay, take the scanners out of the airports, put them at Walmart, put them at Best Buy in the malls, because people are nuts.
I'm going to have to go to Walmart to go through a scanner. I mean, it's just, there's just some stuff that TSA does, and it's just like, people, seriously. And I mean, you had to, I guess... I had to laugh at this one because, here it is. It's from Patriot Post.
Okay.
PatriotPost.us. TSA takes nail clippers from an armed soldier.
Well, how long have we known we're not supposed to fly with nail clippers? Seriously.
Oh, look. Hold on, though. Listen to this. File this one under non compos mentis. Several hundred National Guard troops were flying back home from Afghanistan when they ran into the TSA at Indianapolis in our hometown, Josh. As one of the soldiers describes it, that's where the stupid started.
He's been talking to Emily.
Yeah, I think he's been talking to Emily.
All right.
The soldier said it's probably important to mention that we were all carrying weapons. Everyone was carrying an M4 carbine rifle, and some, like me, were also carrying an M9 pistol. Oh, and our guns had M240B machine guns. Of course, the weapons weren't loaded, and we had been cleared of all ammo well before we even got to customs at Bagram, then again at customs. Any sane person would be reasonably sure this contingent didn't include any would-be terrorists, not the TSA. One soldier had a Gerber multi-tool confiscated, and a TSA agent insisted that another turn over his fingernail clippers. According to the soldier reporting the story, the conversation went something like this. TSA guy, you can't take those on the plane. The soldier, what? I've had them on since we left country. TSA guy, you're not supposed to have them. Soldier goes, why? TSA goes, they can be used as a weapon. The soldier touches the buttstock of his rifle, but this is actually a weapon, and I'm allowed to take it on. And the TSA goes, yeah, but you can't use it to take over the plane. You don't have bullets. The soldier says, and I can take over the plane with the nail clippers? And I guess there was awkward silence. And he goes to the dude, he goes, the other friend goes, dude, just give him your damn nail clippers so we can get the F out of here. I'll buy you a new set. The soldier hands over his nail clippers to the TSA guy and makes it through security.
Oh my gosh.
The thing is, the guy, these guys have pistols and guns on them.
I'm sorry, these guys are also trained to kill, and yes, they could take over a flight with the butt of a gun.
They could take over flight without any weapon at all if they really wanted to. But they're going to take it from... Come on. And I'm just like, this is over the top. And see, that's the thing. That's the stuff I'm talking about. Nail clippers? Really?
Well...
Let's say if I'm on a plane, okay? And some guy takes over, stands up and goes, I'm going to take over this plane with nail clippers. I'm going to probably laugh.
Well, I think we could all laugh because, I mean, there's got to be some big, big nail clippers.
Well, they would have to,
I mean, aren't nail clippers a cousin to box cutters or something like that? I mean, seriously, maybe this is the connection that's made.
If somebody tried to take over a flight with a set of box cutters, I would probably laugh at them again. I'm like, really? Box cutters? Come on, dude.
Oh, my gosh. Well, no, remember, box cutters were used in the hijackings of the planes on 9/11.
I understand that. And guess what? Those guys stood up and took them on.
Well.
Box cutters.
They did in Pennsylvania. Not so much in the other two planes.
Well, true, but still. Oh, well, the stoop just hurts.
That's
the kind of stuff I'm talking about.
That happened in Indianapolis. Seriously, they stopped. Now, what I want to know is, what are these troops flying commercially? Are they going back to Afghanistan or something?
I don't know where they were headed to. They might have been heading back home, or who knows? Yeah. I don't know what they were doing.
Now, see, that's one of those things where, you know, guys like that, you think they deserve a security detail so that they can get around TSA, a la, oh, say, the Speaker of the House.
Right.
I'm just saying, they're serving our country. They're actually putting their lives on the line, you know. And
that's the kind of stupidity that I'm talking about.
And
I understand the TSA agents are just doing their job.
It's a thankless job, but you're right. Discretion needs to be used.
But at the same time, it's like, okay, a guy's carrying a rifle.
Yeah.
Is he actually going to take over the plane with a pair of nail clippers? Really?
Yeah. Well, you know what, Mark? We're at the end of this segment. I think we've exhausted TSA as much as we can until the next crazy video comes out. So I want everyone to stick with us. We'll be around for one more segment, and we'll be right back after this. You are listening to Gillespie on FTR Radio. Everyone, it's Josh Gillespie of FTRRadio.com's Gillespie. Hey, have you ever been out and realized that you're about to miss your favorite FTR program? I'll tell you what you're going to do. You download the Shoutcast app to your smartphone. That way you will never miss another FTR show. So if you think you're going to be out and you're about to miss Fingers Malloy and the Snark Factor, you're about to miss Jenny Erickson, or you're about to miss the Loud Talker, the Needle, have no fear. Download the Shoutcast app. Hey, you can even listen to my show, Gillespie, airing every Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. on FTRRadio.com. Download the Shoutcast app today. And welcome back to Gillespie here on FTRRadio.com. I'm talking with Mark Warner. Mark, you brought up something during the break that seems to be catching Twitter's attention lately. Actually, probably for a while, but it's really kind of getting insane, and that is the one Real Brother 0003. I'm sure if anybody's familiar with Real Brother, if you're familiar with Real Brother, then maybe you've been called a racist or a bigot. If you've had any...
It's just racist.
Oh, just racist? He keeps it pretty simple, huh?
Yeah, I did some research on this guy.
Because apparently some people think he's fake.
No, he's real.
Really?
This guy is a real, real freak, man.
And he claims to be a Hollywood writer or producer or something like that. Is that it?
Oh, he is. He is. And
legitimately?
I guess. Get on YouTube and just type in his real name, which is Theron K. Cow, or Theron Cow.
Uh-huh.
And it'll pull up a YouTube video. Actually, if you go back through my feed, my Twitter feed.
Yeah.
I pulled up two YouTube videos and sent them out, I think it was Friday morning, and said, and I included him with it, and his response...
He responded to you.
Yeah, oh yeah, he responds to you, especially if you call him out on something.
Oh, nice.
Basically what I said to him was, hey, even your own people don't even agree with you how racist you are. He was on BET on this show called, like, I don't even remember what the show was called.
Uh-huh.
But it's an, you know, black entertainment television. It was all black people on the show, and
yeah, okay.
So they were like questioning his, because he was like, "Oh, if you're a black person and you date a white girl, you don't even love yourself and you hate blacks." And I mean, everybody was like, "Did some white girl like tease you when you were little or something? That's why you hate white people." And so basically, I tweeted those out and I said, "Oh, don't worry about it. I was talking to another person." I said, his own race doesn't even agree with him. And he goes, and he responds, he goes, "That's silly too." He goes, "That's silly because," hold on, let me pull up, because the guy doesn't know how to tweet in 140 characters or less.
I've noticed that. They always extend it, like, you know, you have to do some twit longer thing, and it's like,
yeah,
400 characters.
He goes, "That's silly too, that 90% of black idiots have bought into the myth of white supremacy, and as such disagrees with me that whites aren't superior means anything. It doesn't." I'm like, what?
I'm sorry, I was just lost in that. What?
Right, that's what I said. I was like, what? And then the other day, yesterday, Mac Brinkman here in Indiana, up
yeah.
by Fort Wayne, he was having fun with it. And yesterday he goes, I said, "Oh, I feel honored that other people are being called a racist, like David Keller and Matt Brinkman." And Brinkman responds, he goes, "I consider it an honor. There should be a four-square badge for it."
A four-square badge. Well, I know there are things that people will tweet, which I've noticed you've retweeted, where, you know, people will claim or will say, "I've been called a racist by Real Brother 0003. I can retire from Twitter now." That's not the first time, that's not the first time I've seen stuff like that.
But this guy, I thought he was fake at first. I'm like, this cannot be a real account. This probably has some guy just, you know, sitting in his mom's basement just playing around. But this guy is real. If you do the research, he is real.
What's cracked me up is that, you know, again, his go-to line for anybody who disagrees with President Obama is that naturally you're a racist.
Yeah, you're a dumb white – no, Josh, you're a dumb white racist.
Dumb white racist. Okay.
Yeah, that's – no, you're a dumb white racist. You're not just – you're a dumb white racist.
Well, a fellow Twitter friend of ours, Kevin Keeter, if you don't follow Keeter, then what's wrong with you? Keeter has gotten into quite a few conversations with Real Brother, and Real Brother went on to call him a Nazi, which I found hilarious because Keeter is Jewish, which Keeter then revealed to Real Brother, and Real Brother did not back off the whole Nazi comment. It was amusing to say the least, and I mean, how you have to ask yourself, what is wrong with education in America?
Right there.
When?
Well, and I have to laugh because I'm going through his tweets right now.
Uh-huh.
Keeter responded to him earlier. He goes, "Has anybody ever told you how exhausting you are?" And I have to laugh at him because I just...
Well, what cracks me up is he always puts his initials at the end of every tweet.
Oh, yeah, TK Cal.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you come to education, there's just... Yeah, this guy is just... Look, here's the thing. I looked at reviews of his movies and his books, and they were horrible reviews. Horrible. You could tell who the people were that, you know, really liked him. Let's say there was 100 reviews and 2 people liked him, and the rest were like, "Dude, I'm black and this is ridiculous." Because basically he was going after the black people going, "Oh, you hate yourself and you don't love yourself if you date a white girl or a Hispanic girl or whatever. You just hate yourself." And like, in the one video that I tweeted, he was having an argument with Johnny Cochran's daughter.
Really?
And Johnny Cochran's daughter was like, "I've dated black men." "Well, then you don't love yourself."
What?
Yes! And he even said New York was falling apart. It was becoming all white, and the brothers weren't recognized there anymore. A couple New Yorkers stood up and were like, that's not true, man.
Oh, my word.
This is kind of idiocy that comes out of our – out of people. I just don't get it.
One of his more recent tweets. Who's this racist Keter? I remind you, Keter is our Jewish friend. Conservative, yes. And why does she... What? I'm pretty sure Keter's a male there. And why does she think if Palin wins the nomination that it ensures Obama's re-election? Has she no faith in racists to vote for the most racist candidate and not the best? Wow. You know,
that's the kind of stuff that comes out of this.
I love our First Amendment rights. What he follows it up with, what you should do is denounce Keter, the racist opposition of a black president that's based on his race. TK Cal.
Yeah, it's always I had a serious conversation with him one day. I wouldn't call it serious. It got into there. I just finally told him he was dumb and he was an idiot. Because I wanted to go on his level for a minute so he understood the words.
Really?
Because finally I responded, I said, look, I'm going to have to use words that you understand. Dumb.
Well, yeah, I'm looking at
And that's what he was like, well, you're just a dumb white race.
Well, I'm looking at his tweet to First Team Tommy, and the words that are highlighted are stupidity, racist, hate, proof, stupid.
Well, you should read his blog sometime.
Oh, my word. I'm going to encourage everyone to check out Real Brother's blog. It's realbrother.wordpress.com. That's just for your own amusement and entertainment.
Yeah.
Basically,
it's dumb white racist, white supremacy, people cannot tell me. And he told me one day, he goes, you're a racist. I said, how do you figure? He goes, because you don't agree with the policies, or you don't agree with the president. And it's not because of its policies, it's because he's black. I was like, yeah, because I love higher taxes and more spending.
Well, you should, you racist.
That makes you a racist. What?
I'm looking at his top blog post right now is best sweet potato pie in the world. And I have yet to see the word racist used. Little surprise. And he's also quick to defend the TSA.
Yeah, because it's all the white racists that want to stop this.
Ah, here we go. Third post down. Racist double standard. Keter is featured in
Yes,
said...
he is featured in this one.
Oh, that is nice. And so is the guy from who's climbing in your window and snatching your people up.
Yeah. You know who I think should really give a full... you know who I think should see if this guy would come on his show?
Who?
Fingers Malloy. I think Fingers Malloy, and that matter of fact, Fingers, if you're listening right now, I think you should invite this guy to be on your show.
I think we should start a Twitter petition, actually.
We should. We should start a Twitter petition to get Real Brother 003 on the Fingers Malloy show. I think that would be a great debate.
That would it would definitely be interesting.
Matter of fact, I'm going to start that tweet right now.
Okay. It'll be a precursor. We're recording the show on Sunday, so by the time that our share airs on Tuesday night, hopefully we will have garnered support for the Fingers Malloy Real Brother interview. And
I think he would do it.
Oh, Fingers would not. If the opportunity arose, I'm sure he'd jump at the chance, because Fingers, as we all know, is about real sensible journalism. He asks the hard hitting questions, but he might be too white for Real Brother, which automatically will put the conversation at a slight disadvantage. But definitely would be I'm all for this. I'm all for this. I doubt you can actually keep this conversation to just one episode. At least without having your brain explode. You know. You're working on this tweet right now, aren't you?
I'm actually typing it in right now on my journal.
Do you have a hashtag? Have you created a hashtag yet?
No, but you can help me figure that out right now. We are so off base here, but it's funny.
No. I call it the finger hashtag fingers real brother. Although that might sound a little weird, or fingers real brother interview. That may be a little too long, but you know, there's a lot here.
Fingers interviews real brother.
Well, that would be past tense.
That's true.
You know, it's a lot to think about, a lot to anyway, we're going to continue to encourage this until the interview happens. So join Mark's tweet-a-thon. Hopefully we'll have a hashtag for him by the evening of our show as it airs. But we've come to the end of this segment. Be on the lookout for the Fingers Real Brother interview. We're pushing for it here. You're hearing it first here on Gillespie. This is the new petition on FTRradio.com. Up next, you will be having Duke Over America, followed by Jenny Erickson, and then Michael Fidenza, the armchair energist. I want to thank Mark Warner and Christy Kelly for being on the show tonight. We'll be here. Tune back here again next week, 8 o'clock Tuesday nights for Gillespie, every Tuesday night on FTRradio.com. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you again next week. Have a good evening.